Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here. More importantly, thank you to Paul Bredel for being here. Of course, you can find him on ESPN Lacrosse. You can find him on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. Paul, it is Wednesday. We get to talk to you every single week. I look forward to it every week. How the heck are you doing?
I'm excellent, Andy. Happy to be here talking Packers football with you after I know we'll get into it here, but just a very well-rounded performance from this team.
Most well-rounded performance probably since Dallas of last year is probably what I would say in this one. A really fun game for Green Bay, a fun one to break down, a fun one to dive into the tape. But we have to start with some former Packers football. Now, this is very breaking news to Paul and I. This just happened minutes ago. As you're listening to this on Wednesday, not going to be breaking news, but we'll talk about it anyway. Davante Adams just happened. He is now a member of the New York Jets. This came about so quickly and unexpectedly that Davante Adams is already in the New York Jets building. This is probably the most expected trade maybe ever. That hamstring apparently is now all healed for Davante Adams as well. But it is a third round pick that can become a second round pick. The Jets take on the entirety of the remainder of his contract. The Raiders did not eat any of this contract. Thoughts on The Last Dance 2.0, Davante and Aaron Rodgers back together in New York?
Yeah, like you said, it just felt these last couple of weeks inevitable. More of a when's it going to happen, not so much if it's going to happen. And we all know the Jets, they're very much in win now mode, and that's what they're trying to do here with the addition of Davante. So we'll see what it. Obviously, we know the talent that he is, and we'll see how it all orchestrates together for that offense and team.
Win now is one way of putting it. Desperation might be another way of putting it. They, in the consecutive weeks, they have lost games. Last week, they fired their coach. This week, they go out and get a huge wide receiver for a third round pick that could become a second. If they lose next week, I don't know what's next. Are they going to, I don't know, like do some other crazy thing, fire the GM. I don't know what's next on the list, but man, it is going to be very interesting to see. I mean, one of two things, like either way, it's probably somewhat of an interesting story or just an interesting watch of like, all right, does this just end up being an unmitigated train wreck where they put all of these resources into Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers and everyone, and it just goes horribly? Or do they actually turn it around and does it become a really interesting story and Adams and Rodgers click and that entire offense takes off? I still have a lot of concerns about that offensive line in New York. I don't know if having Davante and Breece Hall and Michael Wilson, and like there's a lot of talent there, but man, if you can't have the time to throw, it's still going to be difficult. We'll see. It'll be interesting. It'll be fun story to watch one way or the other.
For sure.
All right, let's get off of Jets talk. We will hopefully not have to talk about Jets too much in the foreseeable future. But if there is anything that comes up, we'll get to it at some point, I'm sure. But Packers, Cardinals, let's just start with your key takeaways from this. So, Paul, I know one of the main things you wrote about is sort of the return of complimentary football.
Yeah, that was my first story after the game. And one, we could see that aspect of it unfolding, but going around the locker room afterwards, like even unprompted, in talking to the players, it all kind of circled back to that was the theme of the week. That was the big message. And complimentary football, that's not a groundbreaking message by any means. We all know that every week, every single team wants to accomplish that, but it very much felt like a needed emphasis, something that you talked about constantly throughout the week, just given how the last few weeks have gone for the Packers. We've seen on both sides of the football a lot of good stretches these last couple of games, but there's also been a lot of self-inflicted mistakes in each of these games as well, leading up to Sunday's game, that just stopped them from fully being able to feel like they put together that well-rounded performance. And I think offensively, one, I think it's just getting the continuity or rhythm back in place of having Jordan Love as your quarterback in practices, being a full participant, getting those reps. Obviously, we know he took there weren't any preseason snaps and then the injury. So just get him back into the flow of it. You get your offense as a collective unit back into the flow. There was I saw Dusty Evely's tweet, just a lot more under center snaps. You get back to the core of, all right, what does this Packers offense want to do? What do they want to accomplish? And so I think that was a big factor on offense. The running game got things going. And the Cardinals, LaFleur talked about it. They really tried to come out and stop the Packers on the ground, got some tough yards in that game. And watching it live, it was one of those rushing performances where I didn't realize how many yards they had put up until I looked at the box score towards the end of the game. And it's because there weren't those, you know, 12, 15, 20 yard runs, but it was just four or five yards, really good gains, which puts you ahead of the sticks. We talked about last week that was a big issue for this team, falling behind the sticks, long down and distance situations. They were largely able to avoid those. And then the defensive performance, stopping the run, containing Kyler Murray, the takeaways, and that sequence where Evan Williams got the stop on Kyler Murray on third and one, like that was just that those next three plays were the epitome of complimentary football. You make the play on third and one to force the punt. Keyshawn Nixon has a 39-yard return. First play, a 44-yard pass to Christian Watson. Like that is that's what you obviously what you want to see, but that just is complimentary football at its finest. So very, very well-rounded performance by this team. It was an emphasis for them, and it great to see when them go out and execute on it.
Yeah, and I love the fact too, like even in, when things went a little bit wrong, you know, when you have the interception that was sort of a fluke play, the defense able to hold them to a field goal on that drive just to kind of make it so that it didn't end up being, you know, snowballing a little bit more than maybe it could have. And then even when Arizona gets the ball to start the second half, and again, the opportunity to go down and maybe really cut into that lead, maybe score a touchdown, again, able to hold to a field goal on that drive. And then just after that, you know, Green Bay played a clean brand of football the remainder of the game, didn't have any, you know, turnovers the rest of the game. And then Green Bay gets all the fumble recoveries and just kind of seals it from there. I just thought, like you said, in all phases, they complemented each other. They limited the mistakes. They didn't hurt themselves as much. And I'm with you in the running game. Is watching it live from the, I sit in my seats are in the end zone for when I actually go in the stands. And I love it because it's like you're watching the all 22 from the north end zone. So it's like nerd like me, you couldn't ask for anything better. But so you can kind of see everything develop. And it's funny because you're watching the line of scrimmage and you're watching Jacobs and Wilson get some of these carries and you're like, oh, that's going to go for, you know, zero, maybe 1 yard. And then you look up and it's like, oh, it's second and five. And then it's like the next one, it's going to be like, oh, that's maybe going to be a loss. And it's like, oh, it's second and seven. Like you just grind it out. Tough yardage all day long. I thought the running backs deserved a lot of credit, and the offensive line, you know, not the most people moving offensive line in the world, but just getting enough of that push to get that positive yardage. And then with a group of running backs that are apt to fall forward and go through contact and get those, you know, little hidden yardage, I thought it was a workman-like day for that offensive line and running game, which was really super helpful to them being able to stay balanced on offense.
Yeah, and the offensive line, pass protection too. We know about the penalties through the first few games this season, but this is a unit that's really starting to find its groove, find its rhythm together, really be a cohesive group of five that's working together. Because we all know offensive line play is very much the sum of the parts are greater than the individual. You can have the best right tackle ever, but if the left side of the line is weak, you're probably going to have maybe at best an average offensive line unit as a whole. So we're seeing a group that is collectively playing good football, playing together. And as the old saying goes, you control the trenches, you're probably going to control the game.
Yeah, very much. I love what they're doing in pass pro. Like they, you know, like I said, maybe not the biggest movers in the run game, but man, they know how to find pass protectors on that offensive line. And these guys, they just do not allow very many pressures. Zach Tom has been unbelievable. Elton Jenkins has been unbelievable. And like so many bad offensive lines throughout the NFL. Look, I just said we were done talking about the Jets, but just go back to the Jets for a moment and some of the stuff that's going on in their offensive line. Like, don't take it for granted, anyone that's listening, how good this Packers offensive line is at pass pro. It is a rare and awesome thing to have on any given team. And especially with the state of offensive line in the NFL, it is pretty special and they deserve a ton of credit for that. Sticking with the offense for a moment, one of the other things I know you wrote about was the ability to have this, you know, Jordan and the offense really spread the wealth around and get the ball into the hands of really all of their playmakers. I thought this was really a great game that showed that and kind of was the blueprint of what we expected going into the year, that you can't hone in defensively on any one wide receiver. It's going to go anywhere at any moment. We saw that in this game.
Yeah, you look at Love's overall numbers at the end of the game and, you know, his collective, I think, best performance, 260 yards, the four touchdowns, an efficient completion percentage. And then you go look at the receivers, and for the most part, individually, it was a lot of solid days, but nothing, anything that leaps off. Obviously, Romeo had the 2 touchdowns. Reed led the team in receptions with 6. Watson led the team in yards with 68. But collectively, when you have 9 guys getting the ball, 10 of them getting targets, I think that's when this offense is going to be at its best. Obviously, we've seen Reed have the big day. Dobbs, Watson individually all have their big days. But for this offense, I think when they're at their best is what we saw on Sunday when the ball's being spread around. Because if you're a defense, what are you going to do in those situations? You can't hone in on just one receiver. You can't even hone in on 2 because the ball could go anywhere at really any time. I mean, Andrew Beck, he had a target on Sunday. The love's going to go where the read dictates, what the defense dictates, where the ball should go. And for a defense that spreads you out, you have to defend the entire field. There's more space to operate. It's going to provide some one-on-one opportunities for the offense to capitalize on. And then pairing their conversation so far together, you have an offensive line that's going to give Jordan Love time in the pocket. Now you're asked to defend these receivers for 3-4 seconds consistently. I mean, man, that is just a really, really tough matchup. And from a game planning perspective, if you're the defensive coordinator, who are you trying to take away? What are you going to try to take away from this Packers offense? Because, and I know me and you have had this conversation before, it's not just, yeah, they have 6 receivers, 2 tight ends, some running backs. It's the variety of skill sets as well, because they can attack all parts of the field. They can do so with a ton of different route combinations, can do so from a bunch of different personnel packages because they have the versatility, the variety of skill sets. I mean, this we saw on Sunday, that passing game, just how much of a stressor it can really be for opposing defenses. And when you have that many guys getting involved, as a defender, your head just has to constantly be on a swivel wondering where that ball's going to go.
Yeah, what I love about this offense, you look at the snap, like, Dontavian Wicks played 10 snaps. He would have played more had he not got hurt. Malik Heath plays 17, Bo Melton 27, Jaden Reed 39, Christian Watson 44, Romeo Dobbs 54 snaps in this game. At tight end, you've got Tucker Kraft with 60, Ben Sims with 28. As you mentioned, Andrew Beck played 7, Josh Jacobs with 46, Emmanuel Wilson with 23, Chris Brooks with 10. Just a bunch of unique, different styled playmakers that are getting out on the field and allow so much, again, versatility, as you were mentioning, and different skill sets that just make it really, really difficult. And I just love that, you know what, Andrew Beck called up from the practice squad, where like 7 snaps are going to get involved. He did a couple of really nice things as a blocker, got a target on the day. Like, there's no shying away of like, nope, we're just going to kind of keep this guy riding the bench. Nope, there is something that Andrew Beck does well. He's kind of that fullback, H-back, Josiah DeGuara type. We have plays that is going to be beneficial for. So we're going to get him in on those plays. And for Andrew Beck, like, to know that you're going to go into the game, you know, having some opportunities to get in, and maybe it's only 7 snaps, but you know what? That's a heck of a lot better than just riding the pine and not getting in there. You know that you're going to have 7 snaps to go out and prove yourself and show what you can do. I thought in the limited playing time, you went out and played well. And again, it just kind of goes for everyone, Ben Sims and all these guys. And we've heard from Matt LaFleur and what they are doing too, from a competition standpoint. We're seeing it at right guard again with Jordan Morgan and Sean Ryan. Like, if you're not going out and giving an A-plus effort at any of these positions, they have guys that will. And whether it's that you're not blocking on the outside or doing your job in some situation, you're not getting, like, none of these guys are guaranteed anything. Like, Josh Jacobs probably going to play a good chunk of the game at running back. Jaden Reed probably going to play a good chunk of the day at wide receiver. But like, anyone else, like, if you're not holding up your end of the bargain, they can put anyone else in the game and they will do so. I think that really just ups the competition and the difficulty for a defensive coordinator to try to plan against Green Bay. Hey friends, week 6 is officially in the books. And can we just talk for a second about how ridiculous the NFC North is? What an absolute tear this division is on. 3 more wins this week. Detroit, Green Bay, Chicago, all pickup wins. Of course, Minnesota had to buy. That's not the only winning that's going on. You need to be doing your winning over at Prize Picks. And Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action. And you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. And when you do sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. So make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm sticking with the NFC North. I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown versus Minnesota. I'm going with Justin Jefferson against Detroit. And of course, I'm going with Josh Jacobs against Houston. There are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, GameTime has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or GameTime will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with GameTime. Download the GameTime app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download GameTime today. What time is it? Game time.
Yeah, on both sides of the ball. And LaFleur talked about this on Monday, just the depth that they have and guys that they truly count on to go out there and play those meaningful snaps. I mean, we've just talked about an offense. We're seeing on defense in the secondary at the linebacker position. Again, that's just not just because of the quantity of the players that you have, but again, going back to the different roles, all the different looks you can throw at the opponent because of that depth is just so, so valuable. And as each week goes on, we see this Packers team getting healthier. They're getting defensively more reps in Jeff Hafley's system. I think we're really starting to see that element of it elevate and help take both sides of the ball off right now.
A couple other quick questions on offense before we move to the defensive side of the ball. This Packers stable of running backs, kind of like unheralded, really fun, really good. Like, obviously we know Josh Jacobs, that's not taking anyone by surprise, but Emmanuel Wilson has been really good. I thought the catch he had out of the backfield, he continues to pass pro well. Like, his rushing and has been super efficient. He has been, I mean, just really, really impressive considering, you know, we kind of went into like the end of like cutdowns being like, I don't like before the Dylan injury being like, I don't know if this guy makes the team because you have Lloyd and Dylan and Jacobs. And then Dylan has the injury and Wilson makes it. Obviously Lloyd had the injury too, but he has been a really, really good number two back for Green Bay. I think there's something there with Chris Brooks too. I know we only got a small glimpse of him this week, but even going back and watching the Dolphins tape, he's an impressive runner. And then you've got Marshawn Lloyd coming back in the near future as well. At least the potential for that to happen. I would assume he's probably not too far away. This is a really interesting stable of running backs, and I'm very intrigued to see how they kind of manage these four once everyone is back and healthy.
Yeah, you need a 7-8 yard gain on the ground, just put Emmanuel Wilson in. I mean, he just finds a way to pick up those chunk runs. It's really impressive, and it's gone back to last preseason through his opportunities last year, this summer, all of that. And I hand up, you know, throughout the summer, the Emmanuel Wilson conversation, I was always the one to, you know, pump the brakes a little bit because the conversation, the questions that you'd ask the coaches, it always went back to, well, there's a pass protection component of it. His ability in the passing game, still something that has to be refined, but you ask those questions in June and July, August, September, every single time there was a bit more of, yeah, he's getting there. He's figuring it out to, yeah, we got confidence in him in those situations. And now we're in the regular season where obviously each snap, each game matters, and they're putting him in those key passing down situations, whether it is to hold up in pass protection or whether it is to catch the ball out of the backfield, because he has earned that trust. And that's a credit to him. I mean, from day one, last summer, we saw him come in the preseason with his ability with the ball in his hands. We know he brings that juice as a ball carrier, but his ability to improve in those other aspects of the game is a big reason why, one, he's on the roster, and two, he's seeing the snaps that he is right now. And with Chris Brooks, I think it's really interesting because several of his snaps came in two running back sets. And going back to training camp, we saw a lot of that as it progressed with A.J. Dillon, whereas A.J. Dillon and Josh Jacobs in the backfield together. And when Dillon ended up being placed on injured reserve, Matt LaFleur talked about how, you know, they had a specific role cooked up for him. And a lot of it was in that two running back set. So I do wonder, as Chris Brooks is, you know, I think he's been here around a month or so now, maybe a little bit more, as he gets more acclimated to the offense, as they get a better understanding of what his true skill set is and all the different ways that they can utilize him. If he starts to carve out a role like we saw on Sunday, being that second running back on the field, that again, it sounded like AJ Dillon was a role he was going to fill, and it sounded like one that was, you know, relatively important to the run game and what the offense just wanted to do as a whole. So I think that's that, to me, what seeing that on Sunday is, was one of the more, you know, intriguing developments towards the end of the game. And I'm curious to see if, was that just a one-off, or is this something that we're going to start seeing built into the offense?
Yeah, I think it's a really good callback, because I had not had that in my memory bank, but you're 1,000,000% right about, you know, how Matt specifically said they had a you know, packages and specific plays set up for AJ Dillon, and maybe Chris Brooks can take some of that. I'll be interested to see when Lloyd comes back. You know, they're going to have to do some roster math. They're going to have to figure out Jonathan Ford this week as well, because his 3 weeks are going to be up, and they're going to have to make that decision if they want to put him on the roster or not. So I don't know how this is all going to play out. I really hope Chris Brooks doesn't go anywhere, because I think they found something there. But either way, really fun player. I really like this stable of running backs, and Green Bay set up very well at that running back position, both now and into the future. Now let's go to the defensive side of the ball. I think one of the big takeaways, I know we've discussed it a little bit here already, but was the ability for this defense to contain Kyler Murray. I know you wrote about it as well, but your thoughts on the defense's ability now, three games against mobile quarterbacks this year, Anthony Richardson, Jalen Hurts, and now Kyler Murray, really being able to mitigate the rushing attack from those guys, but the Murray one might have been the best one yet.
Yeah, it was a really impressive performance. And again, we saw the kind of that similar, you know, controlled rush form the pocket around him to keep Kyler Murray in there. But it's one thing to know you have to do that, to say you have to do that, and then to go out there and execute at it. But they did a great job. I mean, the combination of Kyler Murray and then James Conner at running back, this was, in terms of like yards per carry, in terms of rushes of 10 plus yards, I think the first or second ranked offense in explosive run plays coming into this game. I mean, this was a really, really dynamic unit that the Packers held in check. I think as a group, the Cardinals rushed for under 4 yards per carry in this game. And on the instances where Murray did get out of the pocket, I mean, you just saw the linebacker safeties, credit to them, just swarming to Kyler Murray, just to limit what he could do, push him towards the sidelines so he didn't have the opportunity to cut back or anything like that. So just a really, really well-rounded performance from this defense. And you could tell, obviously, with the run game that the Cardinals have, that, you know, the Packers were playing in base. We saw McKinney coming down in the box to provide some additional help against the run in that regard. And going back to, again, tying this in, the complementary component of it, when your offense is able to jump out to a 14-point, 17-point, 24-point lead, takes away the opponent's ability to lean heavily on the run game. So there's that complementary component coming back into play, because now forces the Cardinals to get out of their offense a little bit. They got to be more pass-heavy earlier on in the game. And obviously that's a positive for the defense in that regard as well. So just a really, really well done job. And then the three turnovers, I mean, we're beyond the point now, and not to say that three turnovers is going to be a norm, but we're beyond the point now, sample size wise, where it's, oh, they're on a good run right now. Well, you know, the old saying, turnovers come in bunches. Like, this is who we're about a third of the way through the season. Like right now, this is who this team is in terms of their ability to force turnovers, to get their hands on the ball. And, you know, I think we talked about on here before, the vision based approach on the back end, eyes on the quarterback, Halfley's ability as a game planner and teacher to create digestible game plans so guys can just go out there and react. Obviously guy like Xavier McKinney helps, but it's the mentality. And I think it goes back to that. When you see three forced fumbles, three fumble recoveries, that's swarming to the ball. That's punching the ball. That's a mentality, you know, more so than I think than X's and O's, right? Obviously you got to be in the right position, but it's going to the ball. It's attacking the ball, having guys around to jump on the ball when it pops out. So I think that's one of the bigger aspects of what we've seen takeaway wise as well.
And I just want to say this is not by accident. Obviously the more playmakers they have in the field, the better. They're getting eyes on the ball, but there are things that Jeff Halfley is doing throughout the course of the game. Justice brought this up yesterday, and it was a really apt point of how we heard all in the offseason how guys like Richard Sherman and some of the players that have played for Halfley in the past have said, this is a coach that will get you Like he's going to tell you exactly he's going to tell you the answers to the test. Like he's going to put you in a few positions per game of like, this is what they're going to do on this play. And all you have to do is do this and you're going to be in a perfect, he's like, he will literally give you the answers of exactly what's going to happen. And you can see that. And at the Evan Williams play in the backfield where they obviously had some tell or something that potentially a read option could be on that play because they were in a perfect situation to cover that up. To me, that's a lot of credit to Jeff Hafley. Obviously a ton of credit to Evan Williams too, for making that play. But there are plays, even when it doesn't necessarily go according to plan, that I see flash on tape. So there's an example of this in this last game where there's a slant play to the left and Evan Williams from the safety position, right at the snap, flies up and attacks the slant and just jumps the route to the point where, like, if you're Kyler, like, and it's very clearly, we saw it on one of the plays, by the way. We saw on one play where Kyler just ripped the quick slant to the left side. He just gets the ball, checks left, and throws the slant. If Kyler looks left on this play, checks the corner, sees the inside open, he's going to throw that slant. Evan Williams is taking it to the house. It just so happened on this particular play, they threw to the right. And like Evan, or like that Kyler got back, dropped back, saw the right, hit a nice play to the right side. And there's a little bit of a, I don't want to say a gambling mentality. It's not like they were completely outflanked because Evan Williams came and did this, but they took a chance and said, we think there's a slant coming on the left side. And if he throws it there, like Evan is going to just see this thing and rip it and bring it back, probably bring it back to the house. And you know, yes, in this particular situation, didn't work out. They threw right. You live to see another day. But like you can very much tell that he has this mentality of like, hey, there are a few times in this game and I might have to gamble a little bit from time to time or maybe take a chance here and there, but he's going to take some of those and he's going to put his players in positions to be successful. Same way on the read option, right? If all of a sudden it wasn't a read option and that's a pass, you've got two guys coming off the edge. It's probably not the ideal situation. As Justice mentioned yesterday, everyone else is one-on-one. It's kind of not what you want, but he reads it right and it's a huge play and you force him into a punt. So I just love the way that this defense is, you know, sort of reading what the offense is doing, taking their tendencies into consideration and having opportunities for these huge plays because of it. That is a huge testament to Jeff Hafley.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I had mentioned that in the article as well in terms of from picking and choosing when to, like when the blitz. And yep. It's not just, hey, we're blitzing, we're sending a fifth guy. I mean, we're seeing different defenders blitzing. We're seeing them range over from different parts of the field from where that blitz is coming from. And while the overall game plan may have been, all right, let's make sure we keep them in the pocket, there are those calculated moments of situation tendencies that they've seen on tape that they go, all right, this is our chance to get back there, pin our ears back, go get the quarterback, or how they're defending in coverage. And again, I think we talked about this last week. It's just that if you're a fan watching this, that's what you want to see. You want to see your defensive coordinator who's making these adjustments, who's dialing up the play call based on the situation and based on the opponent. And again, as Jeff Hafley always talks about, putting the guys in the best position to go out there. And he mentioned this last week, and I think I've said it on here before, but I just love this so much. It's like, I can drop the best blitz ever, but if it can't be executed, who cares? Right.
Yeah.
And so it's putting together those digestible game plans where guys are just, they're out there reading, reacting, they're playing fast. And we're seeing that all over.
I think the major juxtaposition between Joe Barry and Jeff Hafley, you will see a lot of these safe zone defenses where they're underneath players open. We saw it a lot with Joe Barry where they're going to leave the underneath open. They're going to allow you to have the checkdowns, easy plays. You're going to rally and tackle, keep everything in front of you and make sure that in your thinking in Joe Barry's defense, and here's where the change is in Joe Barry's defense. It was, we think that by the time that they try to go 80 yards down the field or whatever, they're going to make a mistake. They're going to have a holding penalty. They're going to fumble the ball. They're going to throw a pick. They're going to get sacked, whatever it might be. They're going to make a mistake along the way. The difference to me with Jeff Hafley is we might have a soft coverage where we're going to leave somebody open underneath, but it's because we're taking a chance at that pick six with Evan Williams on the left side, or we're bringing a double A gap blitz in the middle of the D. We're going to force you into that mistake in the meantime. And if it may, in the meantime, if you do find that underneath player and connect with them and they get 10 yards on the play, all right, so be it. We'll live with that. We'll get him down. We'll rally and tackle to it. We'll live to see another first down, but we're not going to sit back and wait until you make a mistake. We are going to force you into that mistake or be putting players in positions to help them make that mistake. And that's what we're seeing. I think that's why you're seeing so many of these turnovers. And it's such a better way to live, because I don't necessarily mind if you want to take two or three chances early in the drive to go make a big play and get them in a second in 18, or to force a fumble or to get an interception. Or again, on that third down, right, with Kyler Murray, like the risk reward on that, if you bring that blitz and they do actually do the zone read, which is what they did on the play, you're off the field. You get them down, you're off the field, the drive is over. If they go and do a quick out to the right side and you don't have it covered because you called the wrong thing, all right, they picked up 5 yards, it's a first down, and you live to see another down and distance. But this is your opportunity right here to get off the field. Whereas last year we saw so many times where it was just like, well, we're still going to keep doing our thing, and oh, they completed a five, and it was just over and over and over, and there wasn't that ability to force those mistakes. This defense is forcing those mistakes.
Yeah, I love that. They're doing the dictating, like you said. Yes. They're the ones trying to control the situation. And I remember during training camp, we got our first glimpse of that in those early practices. And they're in the team drill, and it's third downs, and you see linebackers blitzing on these third down situations. And that's one of those, and we've seen it throughout the regular season, that's one of those instances where, like you said, the opportunity is there for us to get off the field. Let's get off the field.
Yeah, I love the mentality, and it is definitely paying off, especially with those turnovers so far. Well, let me ask you this easy question. How do you take Edgerrin Cooper or Evan Williams off the field at this point? They are playing such good football. They continue to improve week in and week out. I don't know how you take them off the field. Like, they are that good. And I know the mixing and matching is special, and I know they're still young players, but my goodness, are these two really good football players?
Yeah. And I mean, to put it simply, you don't. Honestly, that's one of the big challenges Halfley has right now. And it's a good challenge. How do we get these guys snaps? And this was the first week where Edgerrin Cooper, I think, outsnapped Isaiah McDuffie. And then Evan Williams. I mean, that you've talked about a couple times, but that play on third down, you know, going back to the draft after he was selected, Sam Seal was one of the Packers' longtime scouts. He scouts the Western area schools. And so he came down talking, and the first, you know, describing Evan Williams, talked about his intelligence, his instincts, and those two traits, whether it's Halfley, LaFleur, Jair Alexander talking about him. Those are just things that Evan Williams brings that we've heard constantly since he joined the Green Bay Packers. And you're seeing that on display. I mean, that play on Kyler Murray, that is someone who, he knows what his responsibility is. It can be really easy in a third and one on a read option to think, you know, as the blitzer going, I'm going to go make a play and just attack that running back. He knew his responsibility was, he was on the contain on the outside, and it made a tremendous play as well. And then hearing him break down the forced fumble, I mean, just all the different components that were going into it. You know, we see the result of him punching it, which is a great play, and then the recovery. But This is very calculated. You know, Williams mentioned after the game that, you know, he's squared up on the ball carrier. So he's in a good position to, one, even make that attempt. And then there were two other Packer defenders that were coming in as well. So he knew he had reinforcements. So he knew he wasn't just going to punch. And if he missed, does the ball carrier keep running and pick up extra yards? Like, it's little things like that, that are all just a part of the equation that he's taken into account as he's making the play. And, again, just really, really impressive. Goes to show the instincts, again, the intelligence that he's been complimented on, and just taking in all that information and making that, you know, diagnosing and determining, all right, now's the time to make that play. And he, just making the plays, you fly around the field too, like he does, you're going to put yourself in a position to make plays on the ball. That was something else that he talked about after the game. If you run to the football, good things happen. And that's what he does.
I was looking for this the other day. I was finally able to find it. My scouting report from Evan Williams, right after the draft, I did my deep dive on him. Here were my first two positives on Evan Williams. Number one, he's a leader on the field, multiple time team captain at Fresno State. And number two, football intelligence and instincts, constantly around the football, consistently making correct reads and run fits, taking smart angles to the ball, understands run fits and cutback lanes, quick to diagnose and trigger, natural feel for the game. Those were my first two positives on the list. And it's really fun to kind of go back and look at, and so even some of the negatives and how he's erased some of them. And maybe we'll dedicate an episode. Obviously, anyone can go back and watch the deep dive now. Those are always fun to go back and look at, especially when you see a player playing like Evan Williams is playing. But you knew the football intelligence was there, and the instincts and the leadership traits were there. But my goodness, is it showing up early and often on tape? And what he's been able to do has been nothing short of incredible. And like you said, it's a good problem to have, but he is going to be a mainstay on this Packers roster for the foreseeable future. When you're playing like a veteran in your sixth game, like, he's going to be here for a hot second.
Yeah. And you know, finding a way to get all three of those safeties on the field. Cause obviously that's an emphasis right now for this defense. You know, there's a trickle down effect of, all right, who's playing time gets cut or who gets left off. Cause I don't think Carrington Valentine saw any defensive snap. Yeah. Any defensive snaps this past game. So again, it's a good problem to have. It's a luxury, as Matt LaFleur put it, but that is the trickle down effect in some of those situations.
And again, it shows the level of competition that there is out there. Cause I know they like Carrington too, but again, like those are all, you know, competitive snaps, and Carrington's going to have to, you know, have to go out and earn it. And I'm sure he's going to be extra motivated to try to get on the field. And totally different game plan this week against this Houston Texans team with Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs. And that could definitely play a part. So that'll be interesting. All right. Before we get you out of here, I got to ask the question. I know you were in the presser on Monday, right? Or were you in the presser on Monday for Matt?
Oh no, I wasn't there.
Okay, you weren't on the presser. That's all right. Yeah. Either way. He was asked about the kicker and Braden Narveson. And I know he gave the, you know, I don't know. It felt like a very wishy-washy sort of, for the first time, it didn't feel ultra confident. It felt like he's answered questions this way before, where it's like, if you read between the lines, like maybe a change is coming. I don't know. How did you read it? And two, how does Green Bay navigate this situation with the kicker and Braden Narveson?
Yeah, I did feel that it was different, because the last time when you're comparing and contrasting, it's right after the Vikings game, you know, right after where there can be the heat of the moment. And is, you know, obviously we know lost by a few points, he missed the kicks. And the question, you know, what about Narveson? And just, no, we're confident in him, he's our guy. And it just wasn't that, you know, it was like you said, I think some of the language you used was, we're day to day. Yeah, he's our kicker right now. Just, you know, not the same. It just wasn't that same feel, and you know, it can be tough to describe unless you watch both of them next to each other. But I think for the time being, they're gonna stick with him. And I think him making that kick after the miss was massive for the Packers doing that. And we go back to the what's the alternative, but how you look at this, I think, can be, you know, depend on your viewpoint, because I think all of his misses have been right, but I think I saw that all of his misses have been from the left, when he's on the left hash and he's missed right. So the positive viewpoint is, all right, it's this one miss, right? And for the golfers out there, you know how much easier it can be able to fix if you just have a hook versus if you hook it one swing and slice it the next time out there, right? So there's that positive of it. The negative side of it is, well, it's just this one thing. We know what this one thing is. Why can't we fix this one thing, right?
Right.
Are we going to fix this one thing if we haven't by now? Because Narveson was spoke after the Vikings game, after that performance, and then in the days after, and it sounds like they know what the difference is. It's, you know, it's in his approach. It's with his plant foot, I think he mentioned, and he's doing it in games, but he's not doing it in practice. So we hear Matt LaFleur talk about, you know, he's making the kicks in practice. He's doing all the right things. So again, you go into the question of, all right, we know what it is. That's the positive. But we're not fixing it, or it's not translating from the practice field to Sundays, which is obviously what you need. It's great if you know what it is, but in those pressure moments, can you replicate it? Can you duplicate what you need to do to be successful? And there's a kick, seemingly a kick or two each game, where the mechanics of it, the setup, whatever it might be, goes a little bit off. And again, I'm sure the Packers are doing their due diligence, kind of taking an inventory of what options that they have out there. Because again, as we all know, the expectations, the aspirations that this team has, you can't find yourself in that situation where you have uncertainty about the kicker position. So feels like, and again, it's Tuesday when we're recording this, when a lot of these transactions happen. So, but it feels like they're going to continue to ride it out with Narveson. But again, I think your viewpoint of it is, you know, the positive outlook, like, hey, it's only one thing, or the negative of, well, it's only one thing. Why aren't we figuring it out yet?
Yeah, it's a tough one to figure out. I'm still intrigued to see what Green Bay does, if anything. Maybe they just bring in some trial kickers this week. Maybe they add somebody to the practice squad. I don't know. Just feels like, again, I've said this all week, I don't know where the line in the sand is, of where it's like you finally rip that Band-Aid and say, all right, enough's enough. And again, there's no great options. I get it, but not a great situation to be in right now. And hopefully Narveson just figures it out. That'd be nice. Maybe once you get on the other side of the field, you can only run plays to the right side so that you're never on the left hash to set him up a little bit better. I'm saying that mostly facetiously, but yeah, they just got to get it figured out because I mean, this is a 3-point spread this week. Not that it always goes exactly according to plan, but like a field goal could easily be the difference between Packers Texans. Like that would not be a surprising, an extra point could be the difference between Packers Texans, like very, very easily. So it's a big week for this Packers kicking game. Go ahead, Bill.
I was just going to say, and in the scope of the, you know, we all know the margin for winning and losing and seeding in the NFC. I mean, look at the NFC North right now. I mean, 4-2 is the Packers and Bears, you know, and that's the lowest win total right now. Like that margin for error just doesn't exist. If you're in a close game, you need a field goal. You need a kicker who can knock them through.
A loss due to an extra point or a field goal being in or out could ultimately be the difference between like second and fourth in the division at the end of the year. Like like one loss could swing that in that big of a way. And that could end up being between being like the fifth seed and the seventh seed or fifth seed and out of the playoffs. Like it could be a totally different game, or maybe between the first and the third seed or first and fifth, depending on if you're the first or second seed in the North. Like it could go in so many different directions. And like you said, the margin for error is just razor, razor thin, and you can't afford to have missed opportunities like that. Paul, always appreciate these conversations every single week. Tell everyone where we can find all of your awesome work.
Appreciate it as always, Andy. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul_Brettel. Head to ESPNLacrosse.com for all of my work throughout the week.
I asked that before. I have one more thing I forgot. I asked Lily Zell this on the Packaday radio show, but I want to get your opinion as well. We're four Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys in now. How do you rank them from 1 to 4 in the pantheon of Aaron Rodgers Hail Marys?
That's a great question. I think number one, I got to go with the Richard Rodgers, Detroit one. There was the one to Cobb. What one am I missing?
What's the Jeff Janis playoff.
Oh, Cardinals. Yes. Okay. The Janis one is number two, just in part because the length of the field that they went in that time frame to even get in that position. And then I'll go the Randall Cobb 1-3, and then the one against the Bills, number four.
To what Lily said as well, I think I agree. I think had they won the Cardinals game, I would have put Janis 1 and then Rodgers 2. But I think the fact that they ended up losing that game just taints it enough where the Rodgers is the Richard Rodgers one is a walk-off win. And the throw is, I think, the most aesthetically pleasing of all of them. So I'm going to go Rodgers, same thing. Rodgers 1 in the Lions 1, I should say, Cardinals 2, Giants 3, and then Jets 1-4. That one's easy. But either way, greatest, regardless of where you put Rodgers in the pantheon of quarterbacks, greatest Hail Mary thrower of all time. That is unbelievably undisputed at this point. Go follow him at Paul_Brettel. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. Appreciate you all being here. Appreciate you as always, Paul. We will see you next week. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.